Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Robinson et al. Titled, Dilated Cardiomyopathy Mutations in Thin Filament Regulatory Proteins Reduce Contractility, Suppress Systolic Calcium, and Activate NFAT and AKT Signaling. This article was published July 21st, 2020. Joining me today are Associate Editor Crystal Riplinger, Lead Author Paul Robinson, and Expert Michael Greenberg. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. And thanks to Paul and Michael for joining us today in this discussion. Paul and colleagues studied three different mutations in thin filament regulatory proteins that are associated with dilated cardiomyopathy, or DCM, and they assess the resulting changes in cardiomyocyte contraction, calcium handling, and signaling. Paul, can you briefly tell us why you chose these three specific mutations?
Sure. Thank you very much, Crystal. So the three mutations are all in the main calcium desensitizers. So that means that when we measure them in our in vitro assays, they were shifting the curves to the right, showing that more calcium is required to activate the thin filament ATPase, and even the calcium affinity of the myofilaments were shifted in the presence of these three mutations. The reason for the specific mutations was that the troponin T mutation was the most severe of all that we tested. And then we were really sort of hand-tied a little bit with the TNI and tropomyosin mutations because they're very rare. In fact, so TNI K36Q was one of two, and I think there's only three or four in alpha tropomyosin. But these were the three mutations that did relatively similar things functionally in our in vitro assays, and we wanted to test them into a whole cellular system to see whether there are any common pathway activations present.
Thank you, Paul. It seems as if these three different mutations do result in some similar functional phenotypes. Michael, do patients with different DCM-causing mutations also develop similar disease phenotypes?
Dilated cardiomyopathy is a highly variable disease, as Paul touched on, that there were similarities and differences that he saw in the functional studies. And when you actually look at patients, you see that there are similarities and differences in the disease presentation depending on the specific mutation that the patient has, the patient's genetic background, and the patient's medical history. Some patients develop pediatric onset disease. For example, there is a well-studied mutation, a deletion in lysine 210 in the protein troponin T that results in severe pediatric onset disease, whereas other patient phenotypes are more subtle and they manifest only later in life.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, Michael. The interesting part as well is that you can have patients with the same mutation, a different family member maybe, and they will have a completely different penetrance of disease according to their lifestyle. So it is really hard to inform complete sort of clinical prognosis and treatment paradigms just by looking at the mutations, even with the added complexity of the multiple disease genes and the multiple mutations within those genes too.
So Paul, if we look in the literature, we will find lots of studies of DCM mutations in mice. But as you already mentioned, in the present study, you opted to study these mutations in guinea pig cardiomyocytes. Can you tell us why you chose to use this system?
So the first reason we chose to look at guinea pig cardiomyocytes rather than mouse was a technical issue, in that when you isolate mouse cardiomyocytes, it's almost impossible to culture them beyond 24 hours, and we need at least 48 hours to turn over our and express our transgene to the right levels. So we were limited to studying another system other than the mouse. We then also looked at things like the calcium handling properties of the mouse cardiomyocyte versus guinea pig, and then compared them to the human. Electrophysiologists will probably know this, but there's a huge difference in the ECG profiles, so the electrical conduction of a mouse cardiomyocyte compared to a human and indeed guinea pig. There's no appreciable plateau of the various waves. The mouse heart also has to beat at 600 beats per minute. The regulation required for calcium handling to go in and out of the SR that has to be far more tightly regulated in a mouse compared to a human. So we wanted something that beat a little bit slower. The final point is that the sarcomeric protein isoforms are also wildly different. You have much faster alpha myosin present in murine cardiomyocytes, whereas in our guinea pig model, it's nearly 100% beta myosin, so that it's more closely reflecting, we hope, the human cardiomyocyte condition.
The link between sarcomeric mutations and altered NFAT and AKT signaling is interesting. Michael, is it known how mutations in sarcomeric proteins can lead to changes in downstream cellular signaling?
That's a challenging question that the field is actively investigating. There are several mechanisms that have been proposed to explain the connection between the mutation and the activation of adaptive and maladaptive pathways. At a fundamental level, as Paul alluded to earlier, mutations in sarcomeric proteins affect protein biochemistry and biophysics by affecting the protein's abundance, stability, and/or function. And at a molecular scale, many sarcomeric proteins with dilated cardiomyopathy mutations show altered contractility. This has been shown in excellent previous studies, including some of Paul's previous work. Here, Paul demonstrates that these mutations in contractile proteins lead to disrupted calcium homeostasis, which likely drives the activation of calcium-sensitive signaling pathways such as NFAT.
Paul, what is either the physiological or pathophysiological significance of the NFAT nuclear translocation and AKT activation you observed here?
So the NFAT activation is a fairly well-characterized, well-discussed activation pathway that underpins a lot of cardiomyopathies, be it hypertrophic or dilated. So the NFAT is nuclear translocated via a dephosphorylation by calcineurin, which is itself calcium-activated. As a consequence of its nuclear translocation, it drives pro-hypertrophic genes like ANP, BNP, and it even begins fetal reprogramming. So at the very end stage of hypertrophic and dilated cardiomyopathy, you can end up detecting fetal myosins and troponins within the sarcomere. AKT is a little newer on my radar. AKT is initially cardioprotective if it's activated. It's anti-apoptotic. We find that the initial response of AKT is to be cardioprotective and help the heart survive for as long as it can.
Michael, can you tell us a little bit about the potential therapeutic implications of this study?
As Paul mentioned earlier, this study really highlights the importance of using humanized systems to study particular aspects of DCM. Every model has its strengths and weaknesses. It's important to consider these limitations when interpreting experimental differences. These physiological differences between humans and other model systems make it so that these systems don't always recapitulate the human disease phenotype. And this study really helps to demonstrate the utility of using guinea pig cardiomyocytes to study calcium handling and the effects of thin filament mutations in DCM. This study also identifies some similarities and differences between the mutants in terms of signaling pathways. Functional experiments like this study here are needed to better understand the initial insults of these disease-causing mutations. Given that the exact disease presentation depends on the specific mutation, DCM is really an excellent candidate for a precision medicine approach rather than the current one-size-fits-all strategy that's taken. And I envision that by binning mutations with similar underlying mechanisms, it will enable the field to design precision therapeutics targeting the specific underlying mechanism of that mutation.
Cool. Could I just add to that as well? The whole sort of paradigm of binning different mutations into functional groups, I think, is a very useful one. And the almost personalized medicine approach, in fact, rather than just targeted binning, is where we're going to see huge advances, I feel.
Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM, can also be caused by mutations in thin filament regulatory proteins. Paul, does your study shed any light on mechanistic similarities or differences between HCM and DCM?
So we have a direct comparator, really. We tested three different mutations that cause hypertrophic cardiomyopathy in the same genes published in 2018. And what I found interesting wasn't the differences, it was actually the similarities in quite a lot of the functional phenotypes we were getting. For example, we would have expected there to be faster calcium reuptake and faster relaxation parameters in dilated cardiomyopathy where the myofilament is desensitized. However, we see a prolonged relaxation and calcium reuptake. And this is exactly the same as we see for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And this is probably one of the functional characteristics that's activating NFAT both in hypertrophic cardiomyopathy and dilated cardiomyopathy. Where we begin to see discrepancies is in how the knock-on effects to calcium handling happen between the two different disease states, where hypertrophic cardiomyopathy causes an increase in diastolic calcium levels, an overall increase in calcium within the cardiomyocyte. It seems like the dilated cardiomyopathy mutations are causing the reduction in cytoplasmic calcium and a concordant increase in sarcoplasmic reticulum calcium.
So do either of you have anything else to add?
There was one little point. That was the fact that we had to test the contractility of our cardiomyocytes in cells that are unloaded with Fura, purely because the BAPTA-derived compounds that are Fura and Fluo and Rod appear to cause contractile impairment in themselves. So in order to get accurate pairwise comparisons, we had to be really careful with this. So we had to do things like measuring the absolute fluorescence as well as the ratios and exclude overloaded cells because they were literally not contracting. It makes these sorts of experiments technically quite challenging. It's led us to have a look at alternatives to these things. So it'll allow me also now to signpost our previous publication in AJP back in February that looked at the contractility and calcium handling of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy mutations using a genetically encoded calcium sensor. And that was interesting in that it didn't impair contraction.
Thank you, Paul. That's a great point and really sort of lays the foundation for future work in this area. I'd like to thank you both for joining us today and sharing your perspectives on this exciting work. Back to you, Kara.
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes.